What's up, everybody? My name is Matt Story, and I'm the host of What's Your Story podcast, where I get to sit with leaders from all different fields and industries to learn how their experience as a person of color has helped them to blaze a new trail and make a unique impact on our world. Today's guest is Amal Yamasa, founder of Make a Play Foundation. This was a great discussion as it had so many gems for those that are either entering their career or those that are looking to make a transition in their career, or even if you're just simply looking to accelerate your career. And Amal also talked about what was it like being an athlete, but also being a person of color, and how he was able to use that to his benefit, and gives a lot of advice for those that are in similar position. Things as simple as, how do you approach your resume as a highlight tape? And how should you think about really using those skills that you've picked up on the field of play and bringing them into your next career? But what I really appreciated about the discussion is how authentic and transparent and just intentional Amal is, and how he was able to find his passion. It was in something that he didn't really think he would go into, but he ended up finding a way to make an impact and to really help others that had a similar experience to him be able to excel in their own journey. So with that, let's get on to his story. Okay, so today's guest has built a career that sits at the intersection of sports, entertainment, and law. And he's now using that experience to help others and those underrepresented students with athletic backgrounds out there really get into executive careers. So I'm excited to welcome Amal Yamasa to the show.
Matt, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Appreciate it, brother. Appreciate you taking the time. So before we dive in and get to know you a little bit better, I was really impressed by the experiences, the vast experiences that you've collected in your career. But there was one that like really stood out to me. And you had a spent some time in the U.S. Department of Homeland Security as a speechwriter. And so I'm just curious, like what did you take away from that experience? Or what do you think people would be really fascinated to hear from your time spent doing that?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I've been in the sports industry or working my way to the sports industry for the past 5 to 6 years. So that's usually the part of my background that gets overlooked. So I appreciate you for asking. I was fortunate enough to go to Morehouse where I played football for undergrad. After Morehouse, I actually went to Columbia Journalism School to pursue my master's degree. And after I graduated, I had this really unique opportunity through a fraternity brother who was the deputy speechwriter for Homeland Security. And he really opened up the doors to me. At the time, Secretary Jay Johnson was leading the department, and he was a Morehouse grad. And so it was a pretty natural fit. So I joined in May of 2015 as an assistant speechwriter. And, you know, it sounds a lot cooler than it probably was in practice. You know, at the time, my responsibility was to draft speeches. And so everything from cybersecurity to human trafficking through Homeland Security's Blue Campaign, I was responsible for drafting those speeches. And then the deputy speechwriters would do their thing in finalizing the product. So I learned a ton. What I found was most transferable was just the style of writing. You know, you have to be very, not only do you have to be very clear and concise as a speechwriter, but you also have to write it as if you're speaking to a fourth or a fifth grader. You have to really, you know, I really learned to value communication in its most simplest form. And so I think those skills were able to, you know, help me not only in my law school journey, but also in just, you know, my professional endeavor. So definitely a really great opportunity. And if there's anything that, you know, to take away for those listening, it's connections matter. You know, I was fortunate enough to get on, you know, or, you know, be introduced to the opportunity through a fraternity brother of mine who put in a Facebook group chat, to be quite honest with you. And so, it was a good experience, though.
Yeah, no, that was the part that I took away is the fact of your network kind of opened up a door that you probably wouldn't even thought to go through and expose you to something that played a critical role in you know, giving you exposure, but also planting some of the seeds that helped you as you got into your journey.
Absolutely. So, and I remember not even knowing at the time that, you know, these stakeholders had speechwriters. You know, it was something I just had never really thought about. I mean, so yeah.
Yeah, totally. So just to like take it back a bit, Can you share a little bit about how you grew up, where you grew up, you know, what was it like, you know, for you and your childhood into adolescence?
Yeah, sure. So I'm one of four, proud twin. And so me and my siblings are a bit unique in that we're all a year apart. And so my older brother's 30, my older sister is 29, and then me and my twin just turned 28. And so we grew up not only close in age, but also just like very close. And, you know, the things that we did on the weekends, et cetera. You know, I would say I had a little bit of a unique upbringing in that, you know, I was a troublemaker growing up. And so I went to different, you know, middle schools and high schools than my siblings. So I couldn't seem to stay out of trouble. But I was constantly, I just had this, I don't know what you would call it, if it was, you know, a youthful ambition or drive, but I always had a drive to really empower people that look like me. So I found myself doing things in school, whether it was founding organizations or, you know, side hustles that really tried to empower people that looked like me. So I was really fortunate enough to have two really great parents that set a great example. And so, yeah, I would say it was a combination of, you know, learning to get out of my own way, because whether it was getting in trouble in school for talking back or whatever you would call it, I was fortunate enough that my parents were patient with me. And I think, you know, by the time I got to college, I kind of had things, you know, a bit more figured out. And so I played football in the fourth grade and then didn't play again until my senior year in high school. And so was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to go to Morehouse College, where I was able to play there. And so, yeah, football has been a part of my story in large part because without it, I probably wouldn't have been able to go to college. And so, or at least college with the scholarship. So yeah. Very appreciative.
Yeah. So I'm curious, you mentioned, you know, troublemaker. And so as someone that found their way into trouble, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So I always knew law was going to be a part. I always knew law and sports were going to be a part of my journey. And so I wasn't necessarily sure if it was going to be on the broadcasting side as a sports broadcaster or, on the legal side as a sports attorney. But I knew I wanted to meld my interests in sports, law, and entertainment to a lesser extent. And so I would say I was pretty, you know, I was fortunate enough at a pretty young age that I knew I wanted to work in the sports industry. And I think throughout the years, I was just fortunate enough to meet different people from my network that helped, you know, make it possible. And so, yeah, I would say I'm one of the fortunate ones that knew what I wanted to do pretty early on. And even if I didn't know what it looked like in terms of title, I was pretty sure from a young age that I wanted to work in sports, primarily to empower Black and brown people, in part because, you know, sports and entertainment represent, you know, such a huge percentage of, you know, the Black dollar and Black wealth. So, yeah, I was fortunate in that way.
So did you have someone in like your network that you saw doing that? Or was it more so of just you played football, you were exposed to it, you knew it was something that needed to be done? Because I'm always curious how people, especially those that find it early, what was the inspiration or what was the seed that was planted that helped you identify that's where you wanted to go, put your skills and your talents to work?
Yeah, great question. So I always tell people this, and that's exposure is so important because I was exposed from a very early age, in part because my father was a physician. And so even though my father was not in the line of work that I wanted to, or excuse me, the line of business that I wanted to work in, I just normalized from a very young age that I would have to be in school for a long time because I saw my father as this physician who put in, right, 4 years in medical school, a year in his master's program, 4 years of undergrad, and so on and so forth. So I wouldn't say I necessarily had a particular individual that I looked to, you know, within the sports realm, but I think I had, you know, the confidence and the exposure through my father and my mother to really, you know, dare to navigate this very difficult industry to enter. So as I got older, I certainly found some professionals that became mentors, like professional mentors of mine. And so, but yeah, as 7 to 10 years old, I didn't see, you know, too many African-American professionals or just Black and brown professionals to begin with. So I would definitely say my father and my mother were the big influences.
No, that's great. So I want to transition to what you're doing today. And, you know, as a founder of Make a Play Foundation, can you just expose everyone to kind of how you set out to create this, what you're doing, and help them, you know, those that would want to check it out, what and how they can get involved?
Right. So great question. So I founded Make a Play in September of last year. So we just had our 12th board meeting last month. And so it's been a little over a year since I started. I didn't start with this end in mind. I didn't, you know, I wasn't really exposed to the nonprofit space. I didn't really know anything, whether it was from incorporating as a business entity, how to, you know, sustain yourself as a nonprofit. But I just had this passion for, again, helping student athletes that looked like me. I was fortunate enough during my last 2 years at Vanderbilt Law to work in the Academic Affairs Office for Student Athletes, where I was able to tutor student athletes across Vanderbilt's 17 different sports teams. And so I remember just being fascinated by, one, you know, the way professional development was structured for student athletes and how non-underrepresented and underrepresented students reacted and responded differently to said professional development. And so, you know, for me, I was fortunate enough to take a lot of Vanderbilt athletes under my wing, particularly on the basketball and football teams. And I remember just thinking when I graduated from Vandy that I want to make sure that my mentees are in really incredible positions after they graduate. You know, at the same time, the way law school is structured, most students get their job offers a full year in advance. And so I also knew so many of our student athletes were at a disadvantage because they didn't know so a lot of these opportunities existed, or that a lot of these competitive industries made their hiring decisions so far in advance. And so for me, Make a Play really, I started out of me just wanting to help the young student athletes in my personal network. I mean, it really, you know, evolved just through conversation. And so as it stands now, Make a Play is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that prepares underrepresented student athletes for executive careers in competitive industries. And so what that looks like in the interim is we leverage coaching, curriculum, career training, and cohort learning to responsibly guide our students to the C-suite. And so we are on a mission to connect 100% of our cohort to full-length internships with top and competitive companies. And then for those seniors in our program, we're on a path to help them identify full-time placement.
Yeah, that's great. I love the fact that you called out that you've been fluid and you've been dynamic and allowed it to adjust as you've learned more, because I think a lot of times, especially as it comes to starting something, we hesitate because we don't have everything figured out, and that can keep us from going. But as you just hit on, in terms of placing, whether it be interns or full-time students into some of these, you know, great companies, I noticed that you brought on some pretty big brand partners, you know, Anheuser-Busch, McDonald's, to name a few. So I'm curious, you know, I'm marketing by trade. There's right. A few marketers that listen to this podcast. What would you tell brands that are looking, especially during these times, to increase their support of underrepresented talent? Like, how would you advise them, whether it's getting involved with you or just in general, thinking about increasing the diversity of their task force?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. So I want to answer in two parts, if that's okay. Because I think it's important for some of the listeners to understand, you know, kind of how we were able to go about securing some of those partnerships. Yeah. I think from the outside looking in, it looks like there's some like crazy scientific approach going on. And really, you know, it's quite simple. I shouldn't say it's quite simple, right? But I think the steps are a bit more linear than people would probably imagine. So when I was putting this together, I think an incredibly valuable skill that a founder should have is knowing when to defer, right? Knowing when, really understanding your strengths and really identifying people in your circle that have complementary strengths. And so for me, you know, I knew pretty early on that we wanted to target the C-suite and we wanted to target competitive industries. So I just tried to assemble a board of directors that worked at a lot of these companies that we, you know, ultimately wanted to partner with. And so a lot of our partnerships, as you see, are literally the manifestation of a board member working at one of these, you know, institutions, connecting us either to the director of diversity and inclusion or to someone in external partnerships. And then us being able to grow organically that way. The second piece to that is, you know, I think it's important for people that are looking to you know, start their own, identify brand partnerships to really identify companies with legitimate intentions. We launched at a very unique time in that we launched in June in the heart of like a very tense social and political climate. What we found is that a lot of those, you know, people that were eager to pick up the phone and call and email and figure out how we could partner, a lot for a lot of them, these were, you know, this, you know, Make a Play represented a very short-term response to what we know are long-term and systemic barriers to entry for a lot of our underrepresented talent. And so, you know, I think through time, we were able to kind of discern, you know, some of the companies that had legitimate intentions versus the ones that were just looking for PR, some type of PR move. So I think you need to have some discernment as a, right, a founder, like, what are your principles? What, you know, what do you want your organization to stand for? And how do you kind of identify partner companies with aligned missions? And so, you know, I know it may seem like you have no bargaining power, particularly as a young founder with a young organization, but I implore you all, if you all put in the work to, you know, really develop a sound product or service, right, there will be interest. One, because you put in the work. Two, because hopefully you identified a gap in the market. And I think, you know, all things, you know, being construed together, I think, you know, it'll you have more bargaining power and more leverage than you think. So I would tell those people, you know, really have an understanding for the company, what they stand for, some of their initiatives in the past. And then those, you know, potential, you know, partner companies that are looking to work with Make a Play, we have a very unapologetic mission, and that's to empower underrepresented students with athletic backgrounds. And so to that end, we really identify partners that, one, see the value in developing underrepresented talent, and then also see the value in, you know, these unique skills that student athletes bring to the table. So, yeah.
No, that all makes sense. I really like what you hit on in terms of really getting down to those intentions and those values and finding the overlap there, because I think a lot of times we're drawn to the biggest check or the biggest dollar, as opposed to putting that aside and finding the overlap in terms of what you're trying to do and how you're trying to do it, because that's how you're going to hopefully get to those long-term impact that you and I'm sure your teams are driving.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned, you know, focusing on those with athletic backgrounds. I'm curious if you could do a double click in terms of what you've seen, you know, whether it be from your firsthand experience as a student athlete at Morehouse or from some of the folks you're working with in your cohorts. What are those transferable skills that help them exceed on the field of play, but also in the boardroom, and really set them up for success? Because for me, I'm really big on like focusing on people's superpowers. And so I'd love if you could just share what have you seen and how you see them be able to transfer that success into the, you know, corporate world.
Well, yeah. And I think that's, you know, perfectly consistent with what we try to impress, or we try and teach our students here at Make a Play. I mean, we actually refer to our bucket of skills as our playbook. So in our curriculum, we develop 6 in-demand skills. And so one is our students' power skills, their management skills, their communication skills, their presentation skills, their leadership and innovation skills, and then all while promoting personal growth and wellness. And we actually refer to our power skills as, right, what, you know, corporate America would refer to as interpersonal skills or problem solving, critical thinking skills. From a quantitative standpoint, I think our student athletes have incredible transferable qualities. One, they have to synthesize information, whether it's through like a very voluminous playbook. You know, our students have to adjust and adapt in real time. You know, if it's our football players, they have to adjust to changed coverages. They have to be quick on their feet, right? They have to identify problems or holes in the other teams, in the opposition, and really develop a strategy to exploit that. I think all of those mirror, you know, corporate America in really meaningful ways. And from a qualitative standpoint, we hear it all the time, but, you know, student athletes are predisposed to working hard, to being disciplined, to adhering to a schedule. I think in addition to that, our student athletes have had experience communicating not only up with senior stakeholders, whether it be administrators on the team or coaches, but also communicating across with students from different backgrounds, students with potentially different views. Notwithstanding, our athletes have to really work with teams to ensure a winning outcome. And so you could probably tell from the inflection in my voice, I could go on and on about the skills that I believe transfer from what we refer to as the locker room to the boardroom. I mean, I'm a testament to that. I did nothing special. I always tell everyone that I speak to, I'm not the smartest. What I think is I was able to leverage the things that I learned on the field off of it. And it wasn't always good, right? Because I wasn't, I think the reason I didn't say teamwork is because people presume that student athletes, are great teammates because they played in, sports their whole life, right? You can, and I always tell them, I always push back, right? No, you can be a bad teammate. And I know, looking to take an honest inventory of my, college career, I could have certainly been a better teammate in a lot of meaningful ways. And so I think I had time, after I graduated to really reflect on the type of professional that I wanted to be. And I was informed in so many ways by the type of athlete that I was, right? And so I tell my younger students this all the time. If you want to be a really good coworker one day, it starts with being a really good teammate. If you want to lead a company one day, it probably starts with leading men and women on your team. And so, I'm really passionate about this. I think that lies at the center of what we're trying to do with Mega Play.
Yeah, no, all that makes sense. And I think being able to use the sports references and show how they actually extend beyond probably what they spend, so high percentage of their time and efforts to that point, and showing them how they, it's almost been on the job training for the eventual job they're going to go get, which is really smart.
Yeah, I think that is incredibly important, because too often it's not the content, right? It's the ways in which the content is presented. Sports as a vehicle and a framework to communicate all of our professional development lessons. And so for us, we tell our students, treat your resume the same way you treat your highlight tape, right? Nobody wants to, just like nobody wants to read a 3-page resume, nobody wants to watch a 20-minute highlight tape. So you have to be very clear and concise about communicating your strengths and weaknesses in a highlight tape when you're vying for an athletic scholarship. In the same way that you have to be very clear and concise about how your skills, your interests, and experiences align with a resume when you're vying for a full-time role or for a full-time internship. And so for us, we don't shy away from our students' athletic past. If anything, we lean into it. One, because we know these industries are very competitive. And so our athletes have an edge just by virtue of being competitive. And two, sports mirror life in so many great, incredible ways. And so I completely agree with you. Oftentimes it's how it's presented, tell our students. Yeah. As a founder, I have to measure our success through key performance indicators. Our students have done that. You go into a season, how do you measure success or define it? I want to average 1,000 yards. As a team, I want to, ensure that we finish top 3 in the Big Ten. And then you have short-term, intermediate, and long-term goals. So it's very similar. I think it just took an organization to really, be thoughtful about how to, break that down for students.
Yeah. So I want to switch to the brand of Amal for a bit. And, you've hit on a few of these stops, but, you studied journalism at Morehouse, you then went on to graduate school of journalism at Columbia, and then you also went on to attend law school at Vanderbilt, which, three top-notch universities, organizations, and also in different parts of the world. So I'm curious if you could just spend a little time on each and to share maybe one experience that has helped prepare you or helped, accelerate you on your journey from those stops.
Great question. Yeah, so I'd say Morehouse, first and foremost, I think what I learned was, one, I think as a student athlete, I learned how challenging it is to not only succeed on the field or on the court or on the track and to maintain a GPA, but I really learned how professional development exists as its own entity. And so because so many recruiters came to campus when we had games or practices, we actually didn't know that a lot of these industries or opportunities existed. And so we tell our partners this all the time. you may recruit from Harvard, you may recruit from Columbia, where some of our students go to, but when you're an athlete, you go to a school within a school. Particularly when, you know, so many of our underrepresented student athletes, right, don't have, right, you know, the support networks that many of their peers do. So I would say, one, I learned that at Morehouse. And I think that's informed, you know, my development of MAP. Two, I'd say from Columbia, you know, I was really able to, it was very, you know, it was a very intensive program, you know, 12 months of really time intensive journalistic stuff, I would say, right? So we had to go to like the Bronx, we had to go to Brooklyn, we had to go to Queens to cover different beats and cover different stories. But what I realized is that regardless of the industry, communication is something that lies at the center of it. And so I think I was really able to channel and develop my communication skills, both verbally and written. And I think it's been able to serve me well. I'm at Columbia, at Vanderbilt. I think I learned the value in just running my own race. If law school was a pure measurement of how you score first year or how many corporate law firms offer you a full-time role, I would have been towards the bottom of my class. But I took agency for my own career, and it didn't look like getting on Law Review. It looked like, okay, how do I leverage this incredible SEC school that I'm at to help student athletes that look like me? And so I think at Vanderbilt, I was really able to kind of bring all of my experiences together. I mean, it really reminded me what I was, you know, what I feel like I'm here to do, which is I'm going to provide those resources to student athletes that look like me. And so, yeah, I would say those are the three things that I took away from the three institutions I've been, you know, fortunate enough to go to.
That's great. I also feel like you went into those institutions and, you know, one would say, oh, you're a journalism major. Oh, you went to law school. Like, there's an expected outcome. Exactly. But I love the fact that you were able to take the lessons and apply them to your passion areas and apply them to where you saw that there was a lane that you could make a difference. Because I don't think a lot of times we, to your point of like, how do you judge success? A lot of times we just let others outside of our own personal circle determine what success looks like. So kudos to you for not only having the insight to do that, but also for carrying it forward.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So I do want to, you know, you mentioned you launched in June in, you know, kind of the middle of this trifecta of a pandemic, economic crisis, and just ongoing social injustice in this country. What have you learned about yourself in being a founder and launching during that time?
Wow. Yeah, I think it's a loaded question. I'll speak from both a professional and a personal standpoint. From a professional standpoint, I think I learned that I'm stronger probably than I thought I was. I remember putting Make a Play together and feeling like I was uniquely qualified to lead this charge because of my background, and, you know, I navigated not only my time as a player, but, you know, also as a professional. I thought I could speak to the issue better than anybody else. But at the same time, doubt creeps in, particularly when I don't have a business background per se, right? I didn't go to business school. I didn't major in finance or economics or anything like that. So, right, particularly when I was first putting this together, you know, doubt always creeps in, particularly at the beginning. What I found is, you know, you have to really lean into your purpose, and you also have to humble yourself to learn from others. I think if there's anything I would, you know, tell younger entrepreneurs is really lean on the people in your personal professional network that have expertise in areas that you don't. I think for me, I was never, right, a super coachable player, right? I was someone who used to question why my coach was doing this or why my coach was doing that. So I think professionally I learned that I'm very coachable, in part because I don't feel any type of ownership over Make a Play. You know, I feel like anything that can, any type of feedback is going to position me to help more students. And so in that way, I'm as open and as coachable as I possibly can be. So I learned that I'm more coachable than I initially thought. I also realized that personally, right, it's been a very trying year. I lost my mother in June to cancer. And so I think personally, you know, it was hard for me to separate it, you know, at one particular time, in part because literally 2 weeks after my mom passes, we have this informational to the public and really important stakeholders. And I felt a responsibility to my team to be there and to be present. But I also felt a responsibility to be physically and emotionally present for like my family, my father and my siblings. And so I think I learned that I'm probably stronger than I thought I was. You know, growing up, we didn't have a lot of tragedy in that way. And so I found myself not knowing how I would respond to the adversity. But I found myself leaning on not only my, you know, professional experiences, but also like my athletic ones. You know, I remember never being the most talented, but I do remember like really wanting to be like better, you know. And I think as it relates to what I'm doing with Make a Play, I think what I was able to overcome personally and professionally this year, I think I was able to, you know, apply those similar lessons. So yeah, I would say one is coachability, and then two is just strength.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that, and you know, my condolences for your loss. And you know, there's never a good time for anything like that to happen in your life. But I can only imagine the many things you had going on, and then what was going around you just definitely didn't make it any easier. So hopefully that strength continues to, you know, you can balance it out and continue to get rest. You know, absolutely. Kind of, you know, as an athlete, you know, you got to give your muscles a break. You got to give your emotions a break, all that sort of stuff. So hopefully you're getting that as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for that.
I do want to ask, and you know, as you shared, you know, being a twin, you shared, you know, having siblings growing up, you know, with the support of family, what role do you see family playing in like enabling you to get to where you are? And how do you really pull from, you know, that lineage and that connection point?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think one, just from a logistical standpoint, you know, I was very fortunate that my twin sister actually worked in the nonprofit sector for 4 years before she entered consulting. And so when I came to her, she was the first person I came to about Make a Play. And I, you know, at that time, I didn't know anything. I just knew I had this, you know, cool name. I was like, yo, I like it. I like the way Make a Play sounds. Yeah. And I know I want to, you know, at the time, I just wanted to potentially go around to a different school, maybe two different schools a year, and do some type of professional development workshop. And she really gave me the confidence and the structure to believe that I could scale this to become a nonprofit organization, in part because she had expertise. And so without her, there's simply no way I would have been able to pull this off. At the same time, you know, from right, just a personal standpoint, I think growing up in, you know, with siblings that are, you know, similarly situated and close in age, you know, I always remembered feeling very like proud of my siblings when they succeeded, because I always felt like we were running different races, if that makes sense. Yeah. And I find that to be incredibly valuable in putting together something like Make a Play, because I don't, if I don't develop the students in our cohort to be better than I am, like I failed them. Yeah. I genuinely want my students, our fellows, to be better than I am. And I think that, you know, that mentality was shaped and informed by growing up in a household where older sister went to Princeton, you know, I'm first one in the family to go to an HBCU, right? My brother was the best athlete growing up, and I was always encouraged by their success, never threatened by it. And so in putting this together, I really wanted to assemble one, a board of peers that felt similarly, right? That we're going to champion these students, and we're going to, you know, hopefully develop them and give them more resources than we had, in the hopes that they'll do better than we did. And so I think I really have to credit my parents for instilling, you know, those virtues in us at an early age. And so, yeah, literally none of this is possible without my family and without my support system, particularly my twin sister. How many hours she spent helping me put this together, I can go on and on. So, yeah. Yeah, I gotta stop now. I talk about my twin, I get emotional. I'm
gonna stop now. No worries. No, that's amazing. One, that, you know, it is truly a family business at that point, and you're able to tie into the strengths of each other, and not only the skill sets, but also just the aspirations, and you know, iron sharpens iron. So that's definitely a beautiful thing. I'm curious, just as everything's shifted to virtual, we're doing this via online. You're probably meeting with all the various teams via, you know, virtual connections. How has that impacted your work, or how has that impacted what, you know, the scale of what you've been able to do? Because I'm sure when you know, last September, when you started setting this out, you had no idea you'd be sitting in a world that looked like it is today.
Absolutely. I think that I can't emphasize enough how I don't want to say lucky, right? Because I feel like you can reduce your dependency on luck by being intentional and moving intentionally. But I do think while we put in the effort to position ourselves for success, I do feel like we were beneficiaries of the time that we're in part because, you know, our main premise is, okay, student athletes are at a disadvantage, right, because of their very strict schedules. They can't go to as many career fairs. They can't go to as many, you know, targeted networking events. And so for a lot of these established companies that have been doing something the same way for years, I think this global pandemic forced them to get creative. You know, I know it had been a problem for a lot of these companies as well. How do we, you know, we want more student athletes. We recognize the skills, right, the unique skill sets of student athletes. We don't really know how to access them. And so for us, we've been able to leverage technology and Zoom and, you know, just different virtual platforms to ensure that our partners get in front of our students, introduce the different lines of business for these different companies and these different industries. And then just from an organizational standpoint, there's simply no way we could have done this in a traditional, you know, if this was a year ago. We're a team that to date, all of us are volunteers. And so we have probably 4 to 5 different partnership calls or prospective partnership calls or meetings a week. And so we simply would not have been able to, right, we would have had to meet with these companies in person. And it would have required people taking off from work. It would have just been a nightmare logistically. And so I think from an organizational standpoint, we've definitely been able to leverage the times. And then from just for, you know, the other piece of this is that we wouldn't have been able to, I think, activate and mobilize as many partner companies if we didn't have this, if things weren't virtual right now. So, you know, I definitely think we've been lucky in that way.
Yeah, no, definitely like it. And I definitely don't think it's luck. You put the effort in, you put the strategy in, you put the values and the purpose of what you're trying to do. And your position, like you said, you position yourself to accelerate it and then to move quickly. And the times are what they are. And this is what people need right now. People, you know, everyone is looking at their workforce and saying, I need to do better with the talent and ensuring that underrepresented groups are here. And you had no idea that was going to be the case this fall. So I again, kudos to you for laying the groundwork and the foundation, and hopefully it continues to propel from there. So I want to look back, and again, you're still relatively early in definitely in your work on Make a Play, but early even in your career. Right. But I want to look back and say, like, have you had a moment, you know, what I like to ask people, a mama, we made it moment, where you kind of felt like, okay, this is what all that hard work and sweat went into?
Yeah, honestly, I can honestly tell you, I've not had a moment like that yet. You know, I've had multiple conversations with friends of mine, and I think it's a blessing and a curse. I think just the way I'm, you know, conditioned is to what's next. How can we build? How can we scale? And this is outside of Mega Play. I mean, I think the cost to that is you're not always as present as you know, probably should be. And so I need to remind myself to take more time to appreciate the small wins. Because I remember the goal for me was prove them wrong, right? Nobody thought I was going to be able to play college football. Played college football. It never was what I thought it was going to be. Right. When I'm a junior, I wanted to become an alpha really badly. I'm joining a fraternity. And I remember getting it and I was like, this isn't what I thought it would be. Right. Then the next goal was getting into law school, worked really hard to get into law school. Getting there wasn't what I thought. Need to keep going. And so I would say there's certainly going to come a time where I look back on what we've created with Mega Play and just be very proud of what we've put together. But I haven't had that moment yet. I think companies are, I think they're typically impressed because they know we didn't just put this together. We took our time, we were thoughtful. And so To that end, I would say we mentally prepared for make a play to turn into what it's turned into. And so I wouldn't say I've had a mama we made a moment to date, but I definitely need to make an effort to be more present so that I can have more of those moments.
Yeah, definitely. So if someone were following in your path, and you know, let's say they were where you were last summer, about to have this idea, about to really get behind this, what would you recommend be the first step they take in going down that journey?
Wow. Okay. So I can answer this in two parts. So the first part is like block out the noise. If I can keep it real with y'all, right? You are the people that are going to comment or criticize. If everything stops today, those people are not going to pay your bills for you. So I would tell people, prioritize the people that are going to really be there if things don't go according to plan. So I think one is blocking out the noise. The second piece is what I like to tell my students is, you know, develop something that makes an impact. And I break it down. So the I is, right, identify a problem. You know, for me, I didn't know I wanted to start a nonprofit, right? But I knew there was not a professional development program that was narrowly tailored to student athletes of color. Mm-hmm. Didn't account for their strict schedules. It didn't incorporate their underrepresented status in the curriculum. If anything, right, I think a lot of these programs frame underrepresented as a disadvantage. Yep. You know, we use it, right? That's our sword. We tell our students, right, where you come from, the sports you play, these things inform the way you look at problems, right? Right. You see Kylie Jenner and these folks get up on interview or on these commercials, and you just know there aren't people that look like us behind the scenes. Yep. And so to that end, even though I didn't know I wanted to put this together, I knew that there was a problem. And I knew that if I was thoughtful and did my research, I could hopefully be a part of solving it. So one is identify a problem. The M in impact is market, right? Really understanding the market. So for us, it was, let me figure out competitors in this space. What is their value proposition? How does what we do differ from that? So I think really just having an understanding of the market that you're trying to enter, you know, the P is passion. You know, that's something that I think across all industries, I think all founders have to be passionate about the product or the service or the organization, or else it will just be too hard, to be completely honest with you. If I had to literally build all of the hours I put in towards Make a Play since September of last year, I don't know where I would be at. And so I've never actually had to think in those terms because I love what I'm doing. And so I think you have to find something you're passionate about that gets you up at night. Like the first thing I'm thinking of in the morning is, how do we better prepare our students for these interviews? How do we create more accountability with our partners, et cetera? The A is, we spoke about it earlier, but adaptability. Have to be adaptable because, you know, we tell our students, we leverage the strategic leadership frameworks of VUCA and VUCA 2.0 in all of our curricular and programmatic initiatives. And so what that means is VUCA stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity and ambiguity. And so, right, we have students in our program that were told at the beginning of the season they wouldn't have a season. And a month and a half later, they're being told they have to prepare for a game October 24th, November 11th, right? Yep. You quite literally, you can't control these circumstances, but what you can control is your vision, your understanding of, right, your task and your responsibilities, the courage to confront these really difficult problems, and then the adaptability to roll with the punches and to still have wisdom and prudence through it all. And so I think that brings us to C, which I think stands for two things. One is find out what your competitive advantage is, both as an individual and as whatever organization you're looking to build. You know, for me, I realized pretty early on, I'd always been told you're a thoughtful person personally, right? And now when we're make a play together and we're presenting our pitch decks, one of the takeaways is that this is a very thoughtful program, right? You've taken your time to think about this. So I realized that, okay, maybe my competitive advantage is just, right, maybe my competitive advantage is just thinking about things, thinking about things a little bit more, right? How can we, and I also realized a competitive advantage might be just that I've been, right, I was an underrepresented student athlete, right? I was in these locker rooms. I was in these classrooms. I'm now in these boardrooms. And so I think my competitive advantage was that our proof of concept was me, right? And at the beginning was like, this is, you know, I try to build a team around people that were like-minded and similarly situated in that way. And the second C is connection. This is not rocket science, how we were able to put this together. It was literally, right, one board member may work at the MLS, right? One might work at McDonald's. One might work at Bank of America. One might work at Anheuser-Busch. How do, you know, intentional about building relationships. And this is what we talked about earlier about content and how it's presented. We tell our students, ignore the word network and just focus more on building organic relationships. I realized pretty early on, you know, everyone doesn't ask you how your day is, you know, not asking, you know, how your parents are doing. And so build those relationships with those things in mind, really try and get to know the person before the professional. And you'll find that when it's time to mobilize and get people to rally behind you, they'll be more willing to than if you just hit them up when you need something. Yeah. And so T, the last is timing. I think you have to be mindful of the times that you're in. I think we've been the beneficiaries of launching at a very pivotal time. I think timing lies at the heart of all of this, right? We could have done this at a time when companies simply were not looking to, right, expand their recruitment efforts, right? If companies weren't looking to, you know, take on new partnerships, it would have been a different conversation. So, yeah, I would definitely say identifying a problem, understanding the marketplace, finding something you're passionate about, being adaptable, really finding what your competitive advantage is, and then connecting with others in your personal or professional network that speak to that. And then T is just doing it, being, you know, thoughtful about the time that you're in.
No. I mean, that is truly impactful through it that way.
So I'm going to listen to this and they're going to laugh because they say I'm like the mnemonic. I'm just obsessed with mnemonics. So they're going to laugh at all it is.
The other thing I think people fail to realize is like repetition is key. Ooh. And like if you don't have something to root yourself in and repeat and to go back to, like you're going to be everywhere and you're not going to be consistent. You're not going to, you know, break through and have that ability to make an impact. So no, I think it's key.
You know, my brother told me this and it stuck with me. He said, practice doesn't make perfect. It makes permanence. And so it's always stuck with me, right? So like, if you practice, it doesn't make perfect, right? Because if you don't practice well, you're not going to, right? You're just going to continue to not practice well. Yeah. And so I think to those students, continue to day in and day out, put in your time, put in your hours. Hopefully, if you like what you're doing, you're not even going to think about the hours. And I know that sounds like wishful thinking. Trust me, I listened to enough of these podcasts to, you know, and rolled my eyes at enough of these founders. That, you know, you want to hear some like hard facts about like what can I tangibly do, but try and find that thing that wakes you up at night and try and build something around it.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm gonna close out with a little bit of fun. So when they turn your life story into a movie, who do you want to play you on the big screen?
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, my sister, I told my twin sister that, and she was like, "Tell them Michael B. Jordan." And I don't think I don't think that fits, right? So I think I have to that's a good question. I don't want to say a dynamic. I would have to let's throw it old school. Maybe like someone like Kenan Thompson or someone like that.
I don't know.
Maybe have Kenan play me or something like that. But I
bring him back.
yeah. Bring him back like Kenan or someone like that. But yeah, I think more so than the person, just someone who just takes the time to like really understand like what my motivations were putting together something like Make a Play. Because as long as I think that is authentically honored, I'd be happy with pretty much anybody. Well, not anybody, right? He has to be black or he got to look like me somewhere. other than that, I would be all right.
So what would the trailer communicate about the movie?
So this is about me personally or about Make a Play? Or both.
This is you personally. It's your life story.
Me personally. So I would, I think the trailer, man, it probably wouldn't be as, well, maybe it would be okay. I think I was, if I was always the troublemaker growing up. And so I was, you know, expelled from middle school, expelled from high school. And so I think people growing up with me would have said, Maul is going to be really successful if he gets out of his own way, right? So I think there would have to be this moment where, like, I think the trailer would communicate, like, this impasse, right? Or, like, between, or this, like, I'm thinking of, like a figurative, like, goal line, right? Like, this, this, you know, this, the distinction between, like, good and bad, violence, peace, right? And having to choose which direction you want to go in. I think that's important because I think right before, like, I went to college, I just had, like, something come over me where I was like, this is, I think, in part it was informed by my time at Morehouse where I was just like, I'm where I feel like I'm supposed to be for the first time. So I think finding that peace, because it's hard. All of this stuff sounds wishful. And trust me, we need to do things as a community to make sure that Black and Brown founders can succeed. Because too often I think we're, you know, we have these incredible products, but we're forced to rush to market because a lot of our founders are strapped for cash, right? And we sacrifice the quality in the process. So I think also just a trailer that communicates like a lot of busyness in terms of like getting the work done, but also a lot of stillness, if that makes sense. And like just taking the time to take a step back and observe what's in front of you and how you can, you know, strategically make an impact. So yeah, I don't think that was a great answer, but hopefully the movie director, I know my line brother, Timmy, would probably be the one that I would trust to carry out that business
for sure. Nice. So I have to ask, why did you get expelled from middle school? Like, what was the reason?
So middle school, I was just talked back to teachers, and like it was a lot of small infractions. So like talking back over and over, or being a distraction or nuisance. And when I got to high school, I was actually expelled for writing papers. And so, you know, I tell people this was, so to, you know, maybe this was my one aha moment was when I got to Homeland Security. And I remember being like, yo, you are now writing for the director of Homeland Security. And I was once expelled, right? I got expelled from high school because I had a business where I would write essays and people would pay me money. And I ended up making like $10,000 in high school. And so, you know, I remember thinking, okay, you don't have this business background. But then when I took a step back, I was like, you have always been trying to like get it out the mud. You've always been trying to leverage your resources, make a lot out of a little. So I wouldn't tell any student to do that, right? Do not write other people's papers and get in and write and charge money and get, and don't get caught either, right? Don't do any of it, right? That's a funny anecdote. Expelled for in middle school for talking back, and then in high school for writing essays for others.
Gotcha. So if you were on the other side of the mic and you had the opportunity to sit with three people, they could be with us, they could have passed, and you could hear their story firsthand, who would your three be?
Yeah, so it's going to sound like cliche, but I would want to have like a conversation again, like with my mom's for real. I think my mom, my twin sister, and then, you know, throwing like Biggie for the, like, you know, throwing Biggie. Yeah, I think those three would be really great.
Yeah, no, that's dope. So that's pretty much it that I have for you. But is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share or anything you want to ask me?
Yeah. So, you know, I think just in terms of what I think we covered a lot, but I really just encourage all of the Black and Brown founders out there to, you know, really continue to push. This is not, we're in particularly difficult times right now, but I think The moment you start looking at your like underrepresented status as an advantage versus a disadvantage, I think you start to see, okay, I look at things differently than my peers. I'm more mindful of certain things. And I think it takes time. I think it takes courage. I think it takes confidence. And so to those students and to those just young, you know, practitioners, I'll definitely tell you, keep pushing. I tell my students, turn your shield into a sword, right? Like try and be as proactive as possible, which is why we've created not a fall back plan. We call it a fall forward plan because I don't believe in falling back. I think falling back to me, right? No one ever told me to create a fallback plan if law school didn't work out. Yeah. And so I think what we have to do is, a mentor of mine used to tell me, the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And so with that in mind, I really believe that our student athletes, the same intentionality that they approach the football field or the basketball court with, I mean, if they use that same fervor to prepare for their corporate careers, they'll be in very unique positions. And so we're trying to turn, or propositions into end propositions, because I didn't have to choose between the football field and my academics and professional life when I was an undergrad. I had the bandwidth to do both. And so Our student athletes come from incredibly diverse communities where, right, you're going to get into corporate America, right? Your hard day might be like some of your colleagues' hard day might be like not getting the coffee they wanted in the morning, right? You're coming to your point, you said it earlier, Matt, you're coming with a superpower. I just hope that more organizations take the time to define what those superpowers are. And I think we'll be in a better position. And so for you, Matt, I appreciate you taking the time. I think this is incredible, giving people in our community a platform to speak on their experiences. Everybody has their own unique story. And so, I don't think I'm different from anybody else. I think I was just trying to be as intentional as possible, leaned on a really incredible supporting cast, and fortunate enough that found something that if I wasn't getting paid a dime, which I'm not getting paid a dime, right, even right now for this, I would do everything I'm doing if you told me I wouldn't make another dollar on it so long as I live, because these students deserve this attention. They deserve the resources and they deserve the support. So thank you for having me, Matt.
Yeah, no, that's super powerful. And my last question is just, if people want to connect with you, they want to learn more, where should I send them?
Yeah, absolutely. So, in putting together Make a Play, always wanted to create something that was bigger than myself. So you can always reach out to info@makeaplayfoundation.com. If you want to email, you can go to We Make a Play on social media. That's Instagram, nice. Twitter handle, Facebook handle. Yeah, but please reach out via info@makeaplayfoundation.com. Would love to connect with as many of you as possible. I'm really the beneficiary of really incredible mentorship. So to the extent that I can, pay that forward, I'm always looking for opportunities. So thank you for having me.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Thank you for listening to this episode of What's Your Story podcast. If you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe, leave us a review, and share with someone else you think might also enjoy it. And if you're interested in keeping up with all things stories and marketing and inclusive leadership, head over to mattestory.com/download to sign up for my monthly newsletter. Until next time, keep sharing your story.